I would like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Ray from San Diego.
I don't know which one to use. Good evening. My name is Ray, and I'm an alcoholic. And if you can't hear me in the back, I don't know if Daryl's still back there somewhere, please let me know, because my voice might get a little bit too soft, I guess. Sobriety date is November 13th, 1993. I have a sponsor that I can say today that I'm current with, same sponsor I've had, and I have a home group, San Carlos Single Purpose Closed Women's Group. And and they're here tonight. Oh, and a reason I mention those things is because what my experience tells me is I need to pass on the ways that I have stayed sober. And those are the things that I do. And when I'm doing those things comfortably and diligently, then my sobriety is a lot smoother than if I'm not talking to my sponsor, going to my home group, reaching out to other women in sobriety. And I learned early on to do those things, and I continue to do them. And, what it was like and what happened and what it's like today, when in speaking to a mixed group with men and women, you know, it's a little, I'm thinking through what would the women need and want to hear about, what's up for the men, and it's kind of hard to balance it, but I'm looking at everybody as another alcoholic, such as myself, and addressing those things that, whether you're male or female, no matter what else, what other attributes you have, you've stayed sober, and we want to stay sober, and we reach out to others. So I could start with all my family stuff. I have a lot of family dysfunction as I was growing up. I didn't realize it then, but I look back and I realize now my parents didn't have any alcohol in the house, and they did not drink. And they raised five children with the intent of all of us being successful, hardworking adults. My two brothers have already passed away from this disease, and I have two sisters who are actively in the disease, and I'm the baby of five. Somewhere along the line, the alcoholism, I believe, was there, but my parents had chosen to not raise their family that way. And I never saw them drink until my father passed away, and then my mom did start to drink. And so that was a pretty big shock to me, actually. And so I'm understanding more now, as I'm a sober woman today, what some of her struggles were. And what her struggles were when she was widowed and had no, she didn't drive. My dad did everything. And she just really deteriorated rapidly after that and with the drinking. So it just really thrills me that I have the opportunity to be a sober woman, that I have an opportunity to model sobriety for my children. I have three adult children, and, they're in and around recovery. We can talk the same language, and that's a good thing. And there's a whole bunch of grandkids that they have blessed me with. And they've even hit on the great-grandchildren. So I've got a whole bunch of little people around when I need to be reinforced. They're there. I had started drinking not as often. I was married to someone who enjoyed drinking, and I was one of those, I guess probably Al-Anon would have been good for me at that time. Like, you know, somebody has to stay sober. You know, I have to drive, and I have to take care of the children, on and on. And so when that marriage ended, I did a little bit of drinking, but not a whole lot. You know, after I was a single mom, three kids, and working full time, I needed to take care of business. And then I remarried and married somebody else. My picker was very broken, I guess, and this person was into the alcohol as well. And then I did start drinking, and lots and lots of stuff that went on because I wasn't a sober mom. And I've done a lot of work around those issues. I came in here pretty broken, pretty discouraged, lonely and alone, and I can remember several incidences really where you know, I called my son one time to warn him of the speed trap on Jackson Avenue, Jackson Boulevard or whatever. And the next day he came by just to kind of see how I was doing. He was living at his dad's at the time. And, you know, it wasn't until much later that he told me about that phone call. And the sad thing about it was I was coming home from a bar called Louie Louie's, which is now Norma Jean's, I think. And he was 15. He didn't drive, didn't have a license, and he didn't have a car. And I woke him up at 2 in the morning because I was a good mom, and I was going to make sure that he didn't get, you know, a speeding ticket. And when I would make late-night phone calls, I got to the point where I'd have to write down who I talked to and what I said, and even that I couldn't read the next morning. But I am really, really blessed to be able to have had a career from which I retired 2 years ago. I had a 41-year career in education, and that's just through the grace of God that I didn't let my drinking, or my drinking didn't. I can't say that I didn't let it, but the drinking did not affect my performance in the classroom. Came real close a few times. I had a very, very dear friend who once pulled me aside and got up off her courage to tell me that the kids had smelled alcohol after I had gone through the room, and that she had kind of was wondering about that too. And of course, it doesn't mean I quit drinking. It just meant I didn't go in her classroom anymore for a while. You know, and I made sure to, you know, have a lot of extra gum around and brush my teeth and things. But she did it with love and kindness, and I was really glad that she warned me, because I certainly didn't want to get caught with that kind of a deal. But I would drink at home for the most part, and I would clip out coupons and organize them and take care of that. I wasn't a bar drinker for the most part. And once I was not with him any longer, then I could keep the bottle where I wanted it, and I could drink when I wanted, and on the weekends I could start as early as I wanted. And that proceeded for quite a while. And then one time I was out at this Louie Louie's, and I was sitting at a table with a lady and her a fellow that she was with, and I don't know, I guess probably because I kept asking her if she minded if I danced with them, and she kept saying, oh, of course not. No, go right ahead. And then she was drinking cranberry juice, and I thought, well, maybe there's a reason for that. And she invited me to go someplace the next day, and because she was going to drive, I proceeded to drink, you know, at 10 in the morning or something. And I vaguely remember her picking me up, and I vaguely remember the drive up there. But what I do remember is that she told me about a group of women that got together, and she said, you know, I think maybe you've got, you know, kids are no longer living in your home, you might be lonely, and maybe you need some women friends. And she suggested that I go to this place, you know, this group of women. And I'm thinking garden club, or, you know, I don't know, whatever it would be. And so I kind of tucked her little card away with her number on it. Well, she became my Eskimo, as we say in this program. She was the person who's, I saw her name or pulled out her card 6 months later. And I remembered where it was. You know, I called her, and she remembered me, and she said, oh, yeah, it just so happens they have a meeting Monday night up, you know, at that, this church up there. They happen to meet at a church. And so I went, and I went in, and there's a lot of laughing women there, a lot of laughing and hugging, and I was, like, really pretty uncomfortable. And I sat down, and this lady wasn't there. She came a little bit later, and she gave me some literature and apologized for being late. But as I sat there, and they went around the room, and the women would say their name and that they were alcoholic. And when it came to me, I said, you know, my name is Ray, and I don't know what I am. But in my head, I was saying, but I am not one of you. I am not one of you. No, 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 no. So I do remember that was one of my first, that was the meeting. And for some reason, even though I felt that way, I kept coming back to that meeting. And there was this perky little blonde lady that would follow me and corner me in a corner, is what I like to say, of what it felt like to me. And she would kept signing, you know, circling her name. And she said, you know, if you want to get sober one day at a time, give me a call. Well, I just remember kind of trying to dart away and hide out and not come in contact with this lady. And I kept going to meetings, and I started a step study, and I was doing some things, but I was trying to do it on my own. And I remember one particular lady took me aside one evening and said, "Are you doing this by yourself?" And I said, "Well, yes, I am, and I'm going to, you know, take the bubble test at the end of the book and check off the answers, and I'm going to graduate." You know, this is the way I was looking at it. You know, I know how to do college courses. You know, I know how to do school. And so she said, that's very dangerous for you to be doing that, and it's emotionally it's very dangerous. So I thought, you know, this is a woman that's younger than me telling me what I need to do. And I had a little defiant attitude going on. But I did call this perky lady that used to, you know, circle her name. And she, I said, "I guess I'm supposed to have a sponsor. Would you be my sponsor?" And she said, "Well, let's just go to some meetings the same time." And we started a relationship. And she's still my sponsor today. So I feel real blessed that I've been able to share my stuff with the same person all of these years, you know. And, you know, I'm not saying that she remembers every single little story or every single word that I've told her, but we have comfort, and I have comfort with her. And I know that I will get answers and suggestions. And she, you know, uses the big book, you know, and she'll give me a page number, or she'll give me something that I've heard that I need to hear again. So if you are new today and you hear people talking about this sponsor person, it's a real godsend, you know, and if you can find somebody that you can do business with, it's really an important part of our program. So I got in recovery, and what I had to do was I had to change all of my play people and play places. You know, I used to like to go places where there was a lot of dancing, because I loved to dance. And I can remember one particular time there was going to be an entertainer at this one place, and my sponsor was saying, "So what are your motives? Why are you going?" And I go, "Well, I'm going to go because I like music and I want to hear the dancing." You know, and she kind of questioned it. And, you know, after I was there about an hour, it didn't feel comfortable to me anymore. So that was one of the things that I learned, you know, that I needed to stay away from these slippery places, as you call them, the kind of music that would make me sad or morose or woe is me, or else even just the kind of music that would generate, you know, over energy, over I just started listening to different music. I put on meditation music and affirmations, and I would have these tapes on, you know, "You are lovely, you are wonderful, and God loves you." And, you know, I'd get to work and I'd turn them down. I certainly didn't want anybody to hear that coming from my car, you know. And, and that's what I remember when one person who lives in this, and I grew up, or I've been in this community for many years, not Allied Gardens, but I'm familiar with Patrick Henry, and yeah, we could probably have a pretty good conversation about that place. And, through my kids went there. One of my son went there. But, you know, they said, "Well, you didn't mind going to the bars in this area, but you don't want to, you know, be seen, you know, at the AA meetings." I was really worried about that and quite concerned. And I still, you know, until I retired, I did maintain my anonymity at the workplace. For me, it was important. It got broken a couple of times, and there was some drama around it, and I worried a bit about that. Some people, you know, don't have a reason or don't feel encouraged to have anonymity, but for me it was important, and it is one of our traditions, so I'm comfortable with saying that's for me what works. And now I'm hopeful that I'll be able to give it back more and not have to worry so much about the anonymity and there being any repercussions because of it. So I'm in recovery, I'm going to meetings, I'm going camping out in the wilderness and reading out of the big book with a flashlight in the middle on a Saturday night thinking, what am I doing here? I'm, you know, down on my knees doing the third step prayer with my sponsor. And, you know, it started to grow on me, but it was really difficult. It was really, it just seemed not at all a comfort zone for me. But for some reason, again, I just kept, you know, I kept coming to the meetings, and I started to embrace the program, and I started to do the steps and worked them very hard, started to get sponsees and worked the steps with the sponsees and that kind of thing. And that's part of, again, what helps me stay sober today is working with others. And it's really important. And, you know, there's one of the things that I hear when I enjoy the Sister B retreats, and I go and listen to that and bond with women alcoholics, and it's so fun. But I listen to Sister B, and I hear some of the things she says about the cause, and from the, our literature, about the causes and conditions that surround our drinking or our careers in with alcohol. And there were a lot of causes and conditions in my world, and I know that today. However, it's not an excuse for me to have had any particular, you know, behaviors, but there are certain quirks and certain turns and twists that happen to us as we're growing up or in our childhood that definitely can affect the way in which we handle life in life's terms. And I really can't believe that I got as far in my life as far as being able to be a responsible person and, you know, get the college degrees and, you know, be a teacher and do all of that. And yet when I got sober and started practicing the design or learning more about the design for living, I think, well, you know, I didn't know about the emotional sobriety. And that's part, one of the things that I'm really finding out more about is how to, again, stay away from the slippery places and all in order to maintain that emotional sobriety. It's my responsibility to do the footwork. It's my responsibility to put myself in places that are going to bring me joy and not be with those energy vampires that sort of like, you know, suck the joy right away. And I'm not perfect, and I still make the mistake of being around people in places sometimes that aren't, not that they don't have my best interest at heart, because I can't really depend on other people to know what's best for me. I know what's best for me, and I'll sometimes, when it comes to family, don't feel like I have as many choices sometimes to, be involved and around, but I've learned to set boundaries, and I've learned how to, hear what they have to say and give them support as their mom. But I also have learned not to get into their, not the enmeshment. I had a dear friend. In fact, they're here on vacation, or they're not on vacation. They're here for a funeral, but some friends, and they're in from Idaho now. And I walked the lake with the lady friend, and we've been in sobriety together for many, many years, and it was so nice to walk Lake Murray and be able to take up right where we left off 15 years ago when we used to walk around that lake and talking about the same things, you know, the same kinds of things, only both of us, I believe, are a little more settled and secure in our sobriety, and we use the tools of this program. But what I was going to say, her husband, I think it's okay to say, part of his career was to work with interventions on and help people that needed help. And he used to come and visit me, and I was their teacher for their kids. And he would say really mean things to me, but he was like a Al-Anon of the, you know, strictest type. And he'd say, so you're going to give money to your daughter that she's going to use to buy the drugs that are going to kill her. Okay, that's what you're choosing to do. And, you know, I would cry, and I would think, how could he say such a mean thing to me? You know, how can he be so? But, you know, I look at that now, and I needed to hear that kind of stuff. I didn't know about setting boundaries, and I didn't know about enabling other people to have behaviors that were damaging or not very productive. And so I had people like that early on in my life that were honest with me. Just like my friend that said that they smelled the alcohol on my breath. You know, honesty is a really big part for me of this program, and I've learned to be able to be honest. And even if I'm not real happy about something that's going on, I can share it with my sponsor or another member of the program. And it loses its power when I say things out loud. If I keep it up in my head, and I think most of us know what the committee can do with that, you know, in the middle of the night or early in the morning, you know, can really attack. And so I've learned to put things out there where I need to and when I need to. And let's see, what else? There's so many things that I was looking through the big book, and I was writing down some thoughts and ideas. And there's a story, and thank you, Paul, for helping me with which one it is. I couldn't find it today, but there's a story about someone who retires. They had 25 years of sobriety. I may be a little bit incorrect on my facts, but then they they quit drinking, but then they retired, and within 4 years, that person was no longer alive. They picked up the bottle, and, you know, and the disease was alive and well and took the person's life. And then there's another retirement story in there about someone who got sober later in life and has had a real good, productive, fruitful retirement. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to now, is now that I have retired, is to get as much joy that I can possibly get as well as giving back to other people. And I was working with quite a few sponsees for a while, and I was doing pretty good job with that. But then I sort of started slacking off a little bit the last couple of years. And again, not working the type of program that I felt really comfortable. In fact, I was going to, and thank you, Larry, for the invitation to come. I was even thinking about telling him, well, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to be a speaker, because I wasn't feeling really good about my program. But I knew that, and I knew what I needed to do. And so I started kind of shaping up there so I could feel like I could stand up here and be honest and say I am current with my sponsor. I have called other women in the program. I had an issue that I was dealing with that was new to me, and I didn't really know how to, I just didn't know exactly what kinds of ways to deal with this particular issue, because I hadn't really dealt with it in sobriety. You know, I had dealt with it when I was drinking and, you know, back in the day, but so I was able to put it out there and say, this is what's going on with me, and I need some help with this. I'm not sure what to do, you know, and I'm not embarrassed, or I don't feel less than nowadays when I ask for help, or when I say, I don't know. I don't really know what to do, but I know where to find the answers, and I know to whom I could direct a phone call that would be of help to me. And let's see, what else? There was, I guess, things. Unfortunately, this disease has you know, gone through the I've passed it on, or it's been passed on to family members. As I mentioned earlier, that my three adult children are all pretty solid in their sobriety and living very productive lives. I'm very proud of them and their achievements, but the grandchildren have they're having some issues around it, and my heart breaks when I have to set a boundary with a grandchild, you know, that I know that I have to say, no, I can't help you anymore. No, I can't, you know, receive your phone calls. It's really hard. And, I know today that that's the only hope, is for me to, separate myself from it and just model and show them how to be members, you know, of society and in a sober way. I believe, it just seems to me that sobriety is hard for young folks today. There's so much access now to things other than alcohol and things that maybe I don't even know the names of some of the things that the, you know, young people are, you know, ingesting these days and trying out and all. So I'm not of much help to them in some respects as far as some of the things that they might be exposed to, but they know that I have had a life with some hard times and some tragedies and some difficulties, but I've stayed sober, and so hopefully I can, you know, be a model to them that way, and they'll know where to go when and if they, you know, they choose to change their lifestyle. And I'm hopeful that, you know, that they will. But I also know, and this is so good, such a relief for me to know, I am powerless over people, places, and things. You know, I am powerless over what other people choose to do. I can model it for them. I can offer suggestions, but I'm not responsible for, and as they say in Al-Anon, you know, I didn't cause it. I can't control it. And there's another C word, I can't remember it right now, but yeah, can't cure it for them. Certainly I would, you know, I always said I would just open my veins, you know, for my kids and my grandkids, but I know, you know, God has a plan, and God, they have a higher power as well. And I didn't know that at first. I had to learn that through a lot of trial and error. And You see what else. I have some notes here, but I don't even feel like looking at them because I did my little teacher thing and I did my outline and what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. And then as there's, you know, people say, oh, please don't go into the long drunkalogue. We don't want to hear about stories. And other people say, oh, tell your drunkalogue and how you did it. And then other people, we just want to hear about the successes of today, you know. So it's really, you know, please some of the people some of the time, but not all the people all the time. So, you know, it's not my job to have to please, and that's a good thing too. I don't have to I am a people pleaser from way back, you know, being the baby of five. I was like the mediator, and I was always the one that kind of brought joy to people. And my dad was, of the five of us, I'm the only one that completed high school or college, you know, and went on to a career. And so it was always was nice to be the person that did the good things and made, you know, my dad happy. And you know what, after being a wife and a mom and a grandmother, all that, there's a lot of people to have to keep happy. And I'm finally, as Oprah would say, I've put myself at the top of the list. And I'm pleased, and I'm okay with being at the top of the list, because if I'm not responsible for my own sources of happiness, I can't, you know, control that either. Always what happiness will come, but the sources, those folks and those places that I choose to be and where I choose to put myself will make all of the difference in the world for me. And that's a good thing. And I've just recently started going to a step study again, and it was really kind of fun. I have a brand new, never been touched, you know, 12 and 12. And so I was underlining because my old one has purple and pink and red and all those highlighter colors. And so I underlined, and they happened to be on the seventh step. And then I went home, and I kind of compared. And it's amazing how the same things that popped up, you know, 17 years ago, are still the things that I need to take a look at, and still the things, you know. I remember being really impressed with that, the saying of, you know, our instincts are in collision, and I really caught on to that. It made a lot of sense to me because I have God-given instincts, and yet I was doing behaviors that really didn't feel right and didn't feel in sync with any kind of a plan that God would have for me or any alignment along those lines. And lo and behold, here I'm looking at the seventh step and shortcomings, and I still have some of that going on where I, you know, can continue to look at and cover, discover, and discard. You know, I just have to keep doing that. And I'm so grateful to the people that came before me. And I remember going to this one particular step study, and I, for many, many times, I would say, oh, I haven't done that step. I passed. I haven't done, because I was afraid to have my opinion. And there was a lot of very strong-minded and strong-willed people in that meeting that would pound the tables and say, you either drink or you're going to die if you drink. You know, and some of them know who they are. And and I was very, very much you know, it really did scare me, you know, and so I got a little more comfortable little by little. I needed to hear that. I needed to be around the men in the program and learn that men could have sobriety and could have feelings, you know. It's like the men are the thinkers and the women have the feelings. And I really don't believe that anymore today. I know a lot of men who have a lot of feelings and they're able to express them, and they don't have to just be the thinkers. But these men were scary, and they would say these things that I believed them, though. I believed them. I thought, well, I don't want to die, and I certainly don't want to die drunk. But I would go to that step study, and I would listen to the words of wisdom, really, and I finally started to believe, like they say, come to believe. But I know I had another point in my mind when I started that. Now I've forgotten what it was. But I would underline and underline and underline, and I would ask questions, not during that meeting. I didn't really feel, I wasn't comfortable to ask questions, but I believe that my higher power, my God, has put me in the places I need to be and continues to put me in the places that I need to be in order for me to continue to grow. And I don't feel that this program has been like it's over. I'm done. I'm going to graduate. Like I used to think. I don't feel stagnant in this program. I feel like the layers of the onion have really, in the last couple of weeks, I've been doing that, peeling the onion stuff. And some of it is painful, you know, no pain, no gain, you know. But it's okay. It's okay because I, you know that pain is, what is it, the touchstone of growth is the pain, you know. And so I've had to have some pain in order to move forward, in order to, I made some decisions over about a year ago to address some issues from my childhood. And it was very difficult. And I went and spoke with some people and talked to them about it, talked to family members, and I revealed some things that I really thought I would probably take to my grave with me, other than a sponsor and maybe a very good therapist. And that's another point, is it tells us in the literature that it's okay, it's recommended to seek outside help at times and if one needs it. And I've done that, and it's really been good, because from that we also did some other kind of group work around other things. But she was a woman that seemed to understand sobriety and what we're about here in this program. And I learned to be okay with myself. And I remember one time her looking at me, and when I was saying, oh, and I didn't do this and I should do this, and I was doing all those shooting on myself big time. And she said, so when did you decide you're not human? You know, when, you know, those are human. And it's again about those instincts in collision. And so recently I was at that instincts in collision stage, you know, and so I'm, you know, dodging and ducking and not really wanting to look at some things that needed to be looked at. But you know, I am, again, I'm as human as the next person. And I know now, though, when I'm not feeling comfortable in my own skin, and I know what I need to do about it. And I still get amazed when I see the things in the book that have always been there, but they just sort of pop up. And when I need them, and when I can maybe help somebody else with those things. And I was telling my friends earlier, because I'm so used to in the teaching realm, you know, I'm not a lecturer. I'm an interactive, and I get this urge to want to look out and ask people if they want to comment. You know, you want to raise your hand, you want to say something, so that I'm not, like, on the whole time, because it's like I feel like I'm really just, you know, it's not the best teaching with elementary school kids to just go, oh, you know. So I want people to interact with me, but I know that that's not what we do at this meeting. So it's kind of tempting to call on people, you know. And I do want to, besides thanking Larry for the invitation, the committee, thank you very much. It's Christine, Christine, and the nice email that came with a little outline about what to do and how to do and when to do. So thank you very much. I love it that people are so involved in this meeting in doing service. And I have a group that's not really my home group, but it's kind of like my homies anyway. It's the Battery Chargers on Sunday morning. And there's a lot of service work at that one too. And I think by being of service is the way that I can stay sober today. Some of the most simple things, and being a greeter, just saying hi to somebody can be very important. Even though for myself, when I came into this program, I guess I thought I was of that variety that thought, you know, I had the book education, so I really, you know, I had it going on, but it wasn't so. I didn't have the tools that the emotional will keep me emotionally sober. And since I do try to keep close to those, I feel like I can, for the most part, and I know our 10-minute speaker referenced something about that too. You know, we don't come here to make you laugh or, you know, whatever. You know, it's like I'm not here to make friends, but I have made some wonderful friends, and the kind of friends that are there when you need them and are there when you don't need them too. It's like they're there. That is a good thing. And let's see. I'm not sure how my at the cutoff point, pretty much. Oh, good. Okay, that's good. But I'm I am pleased to have had the opportunity to share some experience, strength, and the hope is what I get from you folks. You know, my story is my story, but my recovery is yours. My recovery belongs to the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can't go wrong if I just tell my true story. But when I quit listening to those of you that are, you know, blazing the trail, and again, it doesn't really matter about age at all, because I hear some real pearls from people who are new to the program, age-wise, as far as recovery or just chronological age. It doesn't really matter. We learn from each other's, my experience, and I continue to learn. As long as I continue to learn, I will continue to be able to give back what was so freely given to me, and I think that's it. So thank you for letting me be of service.